Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, April the 6th. A happy Easter, Good Friday, and happy Easter weekend to all of you. Today, we're going to be checking out with our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. There's George saying hello like always. And we're going to be talking about some issues here in Texas, as well as a couple of national issues. George, welcome and happy Easter.
Thank you very much. Happy Easter.
All right. Anything special you do for Easter, or your family did anything special?
You know, with the grandkids and the family get together, do the egg hunts, you know, go to church, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, you know, just the regular
stuff. I think that's what everybody more or less does. You know, everybody goes to church on Sunday.
The biggest thing is always watching the kids overdo it on chocolate with chocolate bunnies.
Yeah,
that's always a thrilling.
I never read about chocolate in the New Testament. That must be something we added later. That had to be added later, because I don't remember hearing anything about chocolate. And honestly, growing up, you know, in a Cuban culture, I don't remember all that much about chocolate either. I know we had, you know, obviously Good Friday, we used to call it Holy Friday, Holy Saturday, and then, you know, the Day of Resurrection, as they say in Spanish, on Sunday. But I don't remember anything about chocolate or rabbits or bunnies. I think that we must have picked it up that here when we came to the United States, George.
Easter Sunday and Valentine's, biggest day for sales of chocolate.
Now, down in South Texas with, you know, the Spanish influence, or I guess the Mexican influence as well, was Easter Sunday celebrated more in a traditional Catholic way?
Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely? Yeah.
Definitely,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Everything. I mean, all my friends, everybody, I remember everyone starting at Lent and going through Easter Sunday. I remember everybody commemorating that period.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, that we used to call it Holy Monday, Holy Tuesday, Holy Wednesday, Holy Thursday, Holy Friday, Holy. I mean, the whole week was holy.
Right.
Whereas here, we do more Good Friday. And that's
a very interesting thing here in San Antonio. Up until last year, there used to be a passion play in the streets of downtown San Antonio where someone, an actor, would carry a cross. Dressed like Christ, carry a cross through the streets, and it was very, very, you know, religious, very, very dramatic. I am not sure that I haven't heard of it happening tomorrow. I have not heard of it happening at all. So again, I think that's another tradition, South Texas tradition, that's gone the way of the secular wokeism.
Yes, that's right. No, I at least I know in our Catholic Church it's still very traditional, but not in a different way than it was when I was a little boy in Cuba, and we celebrated what we call Holy Week in a much more, I mean, nobody would work for one thing on Holy Week. Certainly not by Thursday and Friday, nobody was working. Maybe the first couple of days they did work. But Thursday and Friday, everything would be shut down indefinitely. Friday, everything would be shut down. So happy Easter, George. I hope you have a lot of chocolates.
Thank you.
I try to limit my chocolate these days because I tend to overdo it anyway. And I probably don't need chocolates At this point in my life, I don't think my diet needs any chocolate. I think I don't need to add to my already.
I think we're all diabetic at this point. So.
Yes, right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Texas and some of our politics here in Texas. But let's begin. I think you know how I feel about the indictment. I think it's pretty horrific. But I want to get your thoughts on this Trump indictment, which interesting. The indictment itself, more and more people are coming out, at least being critical of it. So what was your reaction, George?
No, I think it's very, very obvious that it's, it's very difficult for people to look at it objectively and not come to the conclusion that it is political. Here is a man who has been the bane of the liberals, the leftists, the Democrats, and they have been looking for a reason to not let him run, to lessen his chances for being elected as president again. And I think that this, and I'll say it, I think this very shady district attorney in Manhattan went ahead and pushed the buttons.
Right.
I mean, really, everybody is admitting that he doesn't really have that much on him. This is the politics that they want to play. The other thing is the comparisons that are constantly made between how Trump is being treated versus how Hillary's server was treated, how Hunter and his father, the president, have been treated with regards to the to their dalliances with Chinese and foreign countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very obvious that the justice system has been weaponized against Trump.
No, I agree, and I would add that. When you look at previous incidents, like, for example, when Clinton left office, when Nixon left office, I mean, look, when Nixon left office in 1974, when he resigned, they wanted to go after him. And maybe there were some criminal reasons to go after him. But President Ford had the good sense of saying, look, let's stop this. And
heal
let's
it.
Do a pardon.
Yeah.
And it probably killed his chances. But nevertheless, he had the intelligence of saying it's not good for anybody or for the country. He put the country first, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Civil War. Look at how the Civil War was handled. The same thing. The same thing. You had people rebelling against the nation. And Abraham Lincoln went out of his way to make sure that everything, that they were
right.
forgiven and everything went back to normal. There were a lot of folks who continued to push for punishing the South. And in fact, in many ways, the South was punished.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that this has been handled, particularly by the media, where they are gleefully clapping their hands and carrying on, it's not good for the nation. It's not good for politics.
Well, even when Nixon, when Clinton left office in 2001, in the last few days of his presidency, he was there was a question as to whether he was going to be indicted or not over perjury and so on. And then they made a deal with Clinton, which, where they said, okay, look, you're going to sign a document saying that, you admit, perjury, and we're going to take away your license, but you leave here free. You don't have to worry about
right.
an indictment. And I think this is, at times like this is where you need people who look at the big picture.
Exactly.
And not just the narrow interest. If you're going to go after a president and for the first time indict him, you got to have a bigger case than this. You
got to
have something really huge.
Much
where, where there's not even a dispute as to the conclusion. I mean, where both sides say, yeah, he did something wrong and he's got to be processed. But again, there's nothing like that here. But here's the other thing, too, George, that bothers me. You have a district attorney who basically runs for office saying, vote for me so I can get Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, how ethical is
that?
And he won.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other that's the other aspect.
How ethical is that? I mean, that's not, I mean,
that
yeah, that's
very
not the job
about
of
him. It says very little about him. It says even less about the people that voted him in.
That's it. I mean, a guy like that, he should have been disqualified just with a campaign like that, especially, I mean, I can understand a politician saying that if you're running for the Senate or the House, you know, that,
somebody
that's
who's
one
involved
thing.
In the justice system.
That's it.
I mean, really,
that's it. No, I think you're right. So that's, as you say, that doesn't speak well of him. But I have a feeling that we'll hear about this again. But I also have a feeling that it's not going to get very far, because I think there's going to be a judge down the line that will dismiss this. So that's what I'm hoping for. I think that would be good for the country, actually, if this was dismissed. There's nothing you can do about this guy, Alvin Bragg, you know, because he's in there. He was elected.
Yeah, he's elected. You can do. He's duly elected. However,
that's right.
The case can be removed.
It can, and he can also be disbarred for his actions as well. All right, well, let's look at some of the local topics here in Texas. As we speak, the Texas House down in Austin, they are negotiating or working on a budget, $326 billion budget, which is pretty big, I guess. And there's a surplus of $32 billion from the last time that they're going to be sending back. We don't have all the final, you know, the final word or the final document, and probably won't for a couple of days. So right now it's a work in progress, but I do expect school choice to come out of this. And I expect the budget surplus, of course, to be returned to the, or part of it returned to the taxpayers. I hope, George, that they do apply some of this money to invest in the power grid. And I think they're doing that, by the way. I think they're doing that in the budget, because we have to have a power grid to meet the rising needs of Texas, George.
I do too. I think the power grid is something that serves all Texans, and so therefore it's got to be taken care of. I believe that it also serves the needs of the economic growth that we are experiencing. I worry about other things, about the effort to, for example, the effort to curtail taxes. I applaud that. However, no sooner have they done that than the city and the county here in San Antonio and in Bexar County have raised theirs. I looked, and they've raised it substantially. My taxes, my personal taxes for the city and the county and the school district went up $400 this year in one
wow.
year, $400.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, it's going to be tough for me, of course, but I mean, if that's the percentage of other people who are on fixed incomes in this county and in this city, it's going to hurt them. But that, again, the taxes that are raised, the fight for more taxes is fought by people who claim that they want to work with poor people, mm-hmm. that they defend poor people. Right. And I just don't understand that.
Well, I think what you also may see in places like San Antonio and Houston and Austin, three very liberal cities within Texas. I know some people may not believe this, but these are the three most liberal cities in Texas. But what I think you may see is that some of these cities are not attracting business like some of their suburbs are.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And
they don't seem to understand that.
Right. And that may be the reason why the people who stay behind are going to have to pay higher taxes. Because, you know, we see that phenomenon here in the Dallas area, where Dallas, yeah, obviously that's the big name that everybody remembers. But the reality is, when you see relocations to North Texas, most of them are not going to Dallas. In fact, very few of them go to Dallas. You know, they'll go to Frisco. They'll go to other places around. So, you know, the future or the taxpayers who are moving in are not really paying taxes in Dallas. They're paying taxes in these outlying areas where all the growth is. And I assume the same thing is happening in San Antonio, George.
That's exactly what's happening. And again, it doesn't seem to dawn on the mind of these liberal city officials. It just doesn't seem to click. The other thing that we're seeing is a continued effort by George Soros district attorneys like Alvin Bragg, but we've got our own here in San Antonio named Joe Gonzalez, who fight for what they call reform. And what that means is that they lower the bail for everybody and anybody who's committed what I consider a major crime. So what they're doing is excusing and tolerating crime, which is causing more crime.
Right.
I do a weekly report on my blog, on my writing blog, I've started doing a weekly report of the crimes, just the large thefts, the assaults, the stabbings, the shootings. And virtually every week, San Antonio is now experiencing a shooting a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this crime, these crimes are pushing businesses out.
Right.
Not to mention people as well.
Right. And they're moving out to the suburban areas
yeah.
that tend to be more conservative.
Much more conservative.
And, yeah, and so on. Yeah. So that's exactly right. So the next time we get
punished for doing a crime.
Exactly. So the next time we get together, sometime next week, we'll have a better fix on how the budget comes out. But it's going to be $326 billion budget. And I was reading in the Texas Tribune that that's larger. Our budget is larger than the budget of 24 states. So that's
wow.
pretty incredible how
that's
big
pretty good.
That is. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about our friend López Obrador, president of Mexico, who
speaking of being tolerant of crime.
Yeah, that's right. And President López Obrador has been under a lot of pressure from U.S. legislators and in general. I mean, there was a shooting in Cancun where four people were killed, and it was explained later that these were, you know, gang fights. So this kind of violence that we thought was only restricted to certain places is now, unfortunately, starting to reach some of the places where tourists go to.
Correct.
And that's not something that Mexico needs at the moment. The State Department has issued travel warnings and so on to Mexico. So President López Obrador, in one of his morning press conferences, decided or informed us that he had written a letter to the president of China asking for information on how whatever the raw materials are for making fentanyl, how they get from China to Mexico, because he doesn't know what's going on. And we don't know what the Chinese have responded to this letter yet. We just know that he wrote the letter. I have a funny feeling that I know what the Chinese are going to say, but I cannot repeat it here on family.
Impolite.
On a family show. But my guess is the Chinese are going to say something like, hey, you know, take care of your territory. Don't ask us what's going on. Take care of your country. And that, you know, that may be what they say. But your reaction to that, him writing a letter to the Chinese asking for information, George?
Well, again, it shows the haplessness of this leader. I mean, he personifies an out-of-touch individual who is nothing more than a puppet of the left. And I mean, from the very beginning that he got in there and started talking about hugs and not drugs, about being about working and trying to welcome the cartels. I mean, you knew that this guy was out of touch. And he is extremely resentful. The man, in my opinion, has a psychological problem of an inferior complex against the United States. The United States might sneeze and he'll scream. This whole situation recently, where several congressional folks, including my congressman here in San Antonio, Chip Roy, said that we needed to call designate the cartels terrorist organizations, and we needed to do something with our military. I mean, that freaked Obrador out. I mean, that just sent him up the wall. And I think what he'd like to do is somehow establish a relationship with China. This kind of a letter obviously is not the way to do it. And at the same time, I think what he's going to do is going to get a polite slap in the face by China, which is going to further confuse him and upset him. And so I don't know. I don't know what he's expecting from the Chinese for them to tell him. They give him the recipe, and then what?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, what are the Chinese going to say? Yeah, we're involved in the illegal trade of fentanyl. I mean, as if anybody needed to know that. But But what amazes me is that you are exactly right. I just want to say that you were right about how he's reacting to not only to Congressman Chip Roy, but also the one who really drove him crazy was Senator Lindsey Graham.
Yes.
That's the one who
really freaked out on that one.
Yeah, he really freaked out. You know, because he's saying in Mexico that, you know, these legislators in the United States are talking about sending troops into Mexico, which of course nobody has said that.
Nobody has said that.
Yeah.
He has said that he wants to get himself involved in our elections.
Right.
He wants to influence our elections.
Right. And he just got involved in the elections in Peru. And, I mean, he was involved. He didn't want to recognize the new president of Peru. I don't know where he gets the feeling that anybody cares about that. But you may be familiar with what happened in Peru. One of his left-wing buddies, Castillo, was impeached by the Peruvian legislature, which is completely their right to do. I mean, they have that right to do. They can impeach him. And then, you know, they put in the vice president.
And he got upset about it.
And he got all upset about it. As you know, it's like saying, gee, you didn't call me. You didn't check with me before you did that. No, we didn't. We didn't check with you because it's none of your business. Yes. So he got all upset about that. And then he got upset, George. This is, and it kind of goes back to what you said, that he has a mental problem. He got all upset because, you know, they have this thing called the Pacific Economic Group, made up of countries like Mexico who are on the Pacific. And they rotate the presidency of this group, kind of it's not a formal presidency, but it's kind of like ceremonial presidency. They rotate it every 6 months. And it was his turn to give up the presidency and pass it to the new president of Peru that he didn't like. So he refuses to give up the presidency. And I'm sitting there saying, I mean, this guy's got to be out of his mind. You know, he has a ceremonial job and he refuses to give it to the next. So yeah, he does have a few problems, but he really freaked out when Lindsey Graham said that. But because, you know, I just thought maybe, I don't know why he thought that Lindsey Graham was talking about sending the army to Mexico, but you know, the only, George, the only kind of military action that anybody has even talked about would be taking out, let's say, some of the cartel leaders with drones or something. That would be the only.
And, of course, military action on our side where we would shut the border.
Right.
That's another one that really upsets him.
But here's the question I have, George. I think I know what your answer is going to be. So it's kind of a rhetorical question, as they used to say. But how is it in Mexico's interest to allow these criminal elements to function in their country? You know, when you have facilities that are making this stuff and it's being transported to the United States, how is it in Mexico's interest to have these people thrive and survive there? You would think that the one country that would want to get rid of it is Mexico, George.
Correct. Again, it shows the amount of power of political influence that these cartels have now developed, that even if the people do speak up, they are going to be silenced. Even if there is a reform movement, they are going to be silenced or intimidated. And this has been going on for such a long time. I mean, to begin with, the Mexican system of politics, although they called it the PRI, they called it el Partido Revolucionario Institucional. I cannot imagine an institutionalized revolution. I don't know what that means. That is an oxymoron to me. But that's what they were. And in reality, they were a one-party dictatorship. Now, you know, because of the influence of the left globally, you have López Obrador, who is no better. But in my opinion, a lot dumber than any of the leaders that existed. So this person, rather than knowing how to control these gangsters, has kind of advocated to them. And you know, you have in my opinion, we do have a failed state south of the border at this point.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, as I said, starting to look like one. And it's starting to really feel like like something could go, you know, very badly in Mexico when you have that much influence. When criminal elements are that important to your country, or have that much power, you have to really wonder what the future of the country is. The other statistic that I saw the other day, which is pretty incredible, is that the remittances, you know, the remesas that are going from here to Mexico every month have risen to 5% of their GDP.
Wow.
That is, I mean, it used to be, it was always between 2 and 3. And now it's up to 5%. Now, that could be a temporary change, and it could go back to 2 to 3 later. So we don't know if that's a permanent change. But that's a huge amount of money that is keeping probably hundreds, if not thousands, of Mexicans, you know, living in Mexico.
Yeah.
Because most of that money goes right into a family budget. I mean, your mother's down there, your sister's down there, your grandmother, sometimes your wife. So the money, it's like a deposit to their checking account that they then turn around and live without. It's not like they're investing that money in a new business or building bridges with it or anything like that. It's simply consumption money that they're getting that these families are using to survive, George. That's a lot of dollars. That is a lot of dollars. Well, let's wrap it up today by just doing a quick review, and it's a little bit early, but a quick review of the 2024 U.S. Senate race. We're assuming that Senator Cruz will run for re-election. It sounds like he is, but he has not said anything, but I think he is running. That's the sense I get. Are you hearing anything at all about a Democrat?
Nothing, of course. From the Democrats, I have not heard anything as far as who might be a challenger. There had been some rumbling about a year ago that there was a state senator from Harris County or just north of there, maybe Chambers County, who was a prime candidate. But other than that, I have not heard of anyone who is being groomed or prepared to challenge him.
Now, it is early, to be fair, but you would think that if you're going to run for the U.S. Senate, running for the U.S. Senate is different than a district, obviously, because you have to have a network, and a state like this, like Texas, where you have, you know, 3 or 4 big television markets and, you know, a lot of territory to cover. You would think that there's already somebody, you know, who's maybe not officially in, but at least getting the word out that he's in. Now, there was talk, and I lost his name for a moment, the representative from Dallas, fairly new representative from Dallas, U.S. House representative, that is, from Dallas, who was thinking about it. But again,
seeing are attacks on Cruz. I am seeing them on a daily basis. The newspapers, publications, the criticism of Cruz is really getting started. And I think that even though they may not find an immediate candidate, the left certainly is going to do everything they can to smear him and to get him out, beat him out by just, you know, portraying him as the worst of worst.
But what's interesting to me is, what does that tell you about the Democrat Party, that there isn't anybody? Because, I mean, you would have thought, for example.
What is their campaign? Their campaign is also smear.
Right. But it tells you a great deal about where the party is in Texas, that the only people they even have a shot at running, or to get the money, that is, would be people who are in the cities like San Antonio or Dallas or Houston. And the challenge that those guys are going to have is, you know, Texas is, as you know, 254 counties. And when you get out of Dallas or San Antonio, there is a lot of political power in those counties. So if you cannot compete in those counties, which is what happened to Beto O'Rourke both times, you know, you're in trouble.
Right. So well, the woman that ran against Ken Paxton, the Democrat Hispanic woman that ran against Ken
Paxton. Yeah, Rochelle Garza, right? Yeah.
Right. She was supposed to show up at a congressional border hearing a couple of weeks ago. Virtually none of the Democrats showed up, the congressional Democrats or local Democrats showed up at the hearing. However, she, Michelle, did send a note, which in my opinion was kind of dumb, but she sent a note calling the hearings ridiculous, politically motivated, and mocking the people, the actual people that were going to speak. Now, that tells you a lot about some of these candidates. I mean, are they that out of touch and are they that arrogant, particularly about an issue like the border, which is so critical, which is so crucial, which is so obvious?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an economic issue. It's a humanitarian issue. I mean, it's more than just a distraction. I mean, it's a major issue that many of these Democrats have avoided. And I think they were starting to realize that they avoid it at their own peril because it just amazes me. It just amazes me that here we are a year and a half, let's say, but a year away from the primary, because the primary is going to be in March. So if you're going to run for the Senate, you got to be in that primary, and you got to have something started to be in that primary.
Let's remember that Biden hasn't officially, announced if he's going to run for re-election himself.
Right.
I mean, he hinted at it, and he and Haud,
I agree, but at least he's the president.
Well, that's right. He's the incumbent.
Right. He wouldn't need, theoretically could put an organization together in 5 minutes if he doesn't already have one. But when you're running for the U.S. Senate in Texas and you don't have anything right now, you have to wonder, are you even going to be ready by primary, which is, that would be technically a year, that would be March, right, of primary. Well, George, thank you as always for your time. Have a very happy Easter. And let's keep an eye on the Texas legislature and see what kind of a budget they pass so we can talk about it the next time. How's that?
Got it. Thank you very much.
Happy Easter to you and to your family, and look forward to our next little get-together here by the magic of video.
Thank you. Have a good one, and thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Our good friend George Rodriguez from San Antonio, and if you saw that picture behind him, he does a radio show out of San Antonio, which I guess is syndicated in a couple of other markets, as I understand. And he goes around and speaks to a lot of Republican groups here in the Texas area as well. Very well informed, one of the guys that we always check with when we want to find out what's going on here in Texas. A very happy Easter to everybody, and we will talk the next time. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.